is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Military aid for Ukraine remains held up in Congress. And at the Munich Security Conference, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said,
"And I thank to everybody who understands how much depends on this single voting procedure."
He was meeting with Vice President Kamala Harris. The conference has been dominated by the news of the death of Russian dissident Alexei Navalny. His allies say he was murdered the Russian prison service as he fell ill after a walk in his penal camp. A judge in New York ordered former President Donald Trump to pay more than $350 million in penalties after a civil suit found he misrepresented his wealth in order to secure more favorable loan terms. He is vowing to appeal as he calls it a witch hunt. President Biden was in East Palestine, Ohio, Friday for the first time since last year's train derailment and chemical spill. This is ABC News. One firefighter was killed and nine were hurt in Sterling, Virginia, in Loudoun County, just outside Washington, D.C. They were investigating a gas leak when a home exploded Friday night. The ATF is involved in the investigation. Authorities in Northern California are trying to determine what made 25 children sick at a school in Napa.
It was first period at Vintage High School in Napa on Thursday when students started getting sick. Ileana Calderon talked to a friend who was in the choir room when it happened.
A couple of students had passed out and one was throwing up.
Emergency teams moved in and did testing. Five students went to a hospital. Julie Bordis with Napa Valley Unified Schools.
The fire department, police department, and PG&E have deemed not only the choir room, but the band room that is adjacent to it and the entire building as safe.
Alex Stone, ABC News.
Unusual golf mishap for star Jordan Spieth. He was disqualified from the Genesis Invitational. He signed the wrong scorecard. Brian Clark, ABC News.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media Radio Network recognizes the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Kelvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Echoes of Empowerment, Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl Ingram.
In March 1965, Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. led a peaceful group marching in support of voting rights. But police attacked them as they tried to cross the Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama. Voting was nearly impossible for black people because of unfair processes like literacy tests and poll taxes. A few months after the march protests, Congress passed the Voting Rights Act, giving everyone a chance to vote. Listen for more black history stories here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Local clerks say they're confident they could run safe and transparent elections this year, but they say they could use more money to make them run better. Mike Moan reports.
The city of Madison has been recognized by policy experts for holding safe and secure elections during the pandemic. But city clerk Maribeth Witzel-Beal says budget constraints can make it a difficult balancing act. She says there's greater interest in absentee ballots, requiring more manpower and building space to process them. However, there's a key problem.
The funding that we receive from the state and from the federal government hasn't increased to accommodate any of that.
She says that puts more pressure on property taxes. Meanwhile, a bipartisan coalition of state and local election officials estimates that offices around the country need at least $53 billion over a decade to repair and modernize election infrastructure. There are specific requests in the current federal budget debate, but the House and Senate are at odds over how much to provide. Sunwoo Oh with the progressive nonprofit group Stand Up America says policymakers need to understand how pressing this matter is.
We've been working to try to get more consistent and predictable funding from Congress to help support local administrators to get the resources they need and help modernize the election infrastructure that's super outdated in most of the jurisdictions.
In a national poll, 7 in 10 Americans said they believe the federal government should be just as responsible, if not more so, for election funding than local municipalities and states. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Hey, everybody, it's Todd Alba, Monday, noon to 3. Could you go all day without looking at your cell phone? We'll discuss on the Civic Media Ready Network.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Quite windy today. Winds will gust over 30 miles per hour, maybe 35 out of the west. Even though we'll have sunshine and air temps near 32, wind chills will be near zero or below most of the day. For tonight, mostly clear and breezy at a low around 25.
Right now, 12 degrees.
Broadcasting from the Eagle's Nest. With everything lacrosse is talking about. You're soaring with Eagle 1490.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning. This is Jim Santel, and yes, indeed, I am your host this morning, as I am every Saturday morning here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. I am delighted to have you with me again this morning on our broadcast. It is Saturday, February 17th, 2024. What a week it has been in the areas of law and government and the aspiration for justice in America. Those are the topics that we always address here on our Saturday morning broadcast. This week, no exception to that plan, to that syllabus. As always, reviewing those most significant stories, and there are many of them from just the past several days, even from yesterday afternoon. We're going to talk about all of those during the course of the next 2 hours. Delighted to have you with me here. I am in the studios of WAUK here in downtown Waukesha with my wonderful producer, Johnny. And together we're going to be talking with you about these and other issues related to our lives and livelihoods in Wisconsin, in the United States of America, and yes, also how those things affect our place in the world. What is that syllabus and what is that all about? We're going to be chatting, as always, about three principal questions. What happened? What do we know? What are the facts of particular cases? Why are those things important and relevant? We'll be talking a lot this morning about the issue of relevance when it comes to one of those significant events from just this past week. Why are they material? Why are they significant? And what should we do, if anything, about those kinds of things? What are the appropriate actions of people who are concerned and focused upon their futures and the futures of the communities in which we live? All those things animating our very animated syllabus this morning, our agenda for discussion. And I suspect you know well the topics we're going to be addressing because they are at the top of the headlines, newspapers, media outlets throughout this past week. We're going to begin by talking about, finally, the establishment of what appears to be a certain trial date for one of the several criminal trials right now pending in the courts of America. This one having to do with a hush money case pending in a trial court in Manhattan. I'm going to chat with you about the decision by a judge, his name is Juan Merchan, to set that case for trial. It's a criminal case involving Donald Trump. Coming up in just about a month or so from now. Then after that, we're going to chat about a somewhat related matter because all these things are associated by virtue of calendars. We're going to talk about something else that happened in New York just yesterday, and that is the entry of a major civil judgment, not a criminal matter, a civil judgment against Donald Trump. And again, you have seen this as well. You know what the story is about this particular matter. A huge monetary judgment. And I'm going to offer even more than that, a significant restriction on the capacity of Donald Trump to operate as a businessman in New York. The impacts of that one, ask and hopefully answer the questions, why is that meaningful? And why, even in a civil setting, can it potentially be as significant, different, but significant as a criminal judgment entered in one of these other pending cases? Then we're going to spend some time also talking about other matters out there, including going to the South for a while. This hearing that was conducted over the period of the past couple of days involving the Georgia RICO prosecution, this again identifying Donald Trump and 18 other defendants in that case for their involvement in the insurrection, the attempt to interfere with the 2020 election as it related to votes and the counting of electoral votes coming out of the state of Georgia. A major two-day hearing, an evidentiary hearing, and again, offering some perspectives on the issue of relevance. The issue of relevance, why it is we're doing that, under what circumstances this is in court, and what the certain disposition of that case should be. Some predictions coming out of it in the wake of the incredible testimony of a district attorney now appearing on the stand to justify her personal life, if you will, in connection with the prosecution of Donald Trump. We're going to chat a lot about that and pull that apart inside Georgia law, get an understanding of why it is that that case is there in the first place, and second, talking about some of the analytics behind what the judge can and should do. Beyond that, we're going to come back to Wisconsin and talk about some major events just this past week or so involving something we've talked about before, that is the pending case in front of the Wisconsin Supreme Court having to do with maps in the state of Wisconsin. Virtually every state in the union still addressing in ways big and small issues related to in the wake of the 2020 census and line drawing. That includes right here in the state of Wisconsin, how it is that the assembly and the Senate districts in our state will be divided up, how the maps will be drawn, significant events, legislative this past week, and perhaps some action by our governor in the coming days with respect to that could have a dramatic impact, not only upon the pending litigation, the civil litigation still pending in front of our Wisconsin Supreme Court, in the wake of the decision by that court in December of last year, finding that our present maps are unconstitutional, contrary to the terms and conditions of our own state constitution. We'll talk about the consequences of some legislative action and perhaps make some recommendations about what should happen here in the interest of justice, in the interest of ensuring that everyone in the state of Wisconsin has a franchise to exercise in the coming months and the coming years. We'll chat about all of that and more right here on our Saturday morning broadcast. A lot of things to talk about, a lot on our agenda, and welcome you once again to our Saturday morning broadcast as also. And so let us begin. Let us jump right into that first story that, again, is at the top of the news stories across our nation. We know from just yesterday that a New York judge, a civil New York judge in a civil courtroom, returned to the court and issued a major judgment, really a crushing defeat for Donald Trump in the civil fraud case, finding that the former president is indeed liable for conspiring to manipulate his net worth and ordering him to pay a penalty that on its surface is about $355 million plus interest. And that plus interest piece is all important. An awful lot of calculations today that indicate that when you add interest and other matters onto this arithmetically, this judgment will probably exceed $450 million against the former president. That coming out of a decision by Judge Arthur Engoron just yesterday, capping off what can only be described as a chaotic, years-long case brought by the Attorney General of the state of New York. Her name, of course, is Letitia James, and focusing on the wealth and specifically the valuation of properties undertaken by Donald Trump, his two sons, and the Trump Corporation for many, many years. No jury here. No jury. It is simply the judge who is entertaining argument. As a predicate to all of this, we recall well that Judge Engoron had previously found, based upon the presentation of written evidence to him, that there was no doubt that there was fraud by the Trump Corporation and by the individuals responsible for its administration. He found, as a matter of law and fact, under this summary judgment process of many months ago, that indeed Donald Trump had engaged in fraud. And for that reason, the recent trial, concluded again a number of weeks ago, was premised only upon the issue of damages. How much money would it take to restore to the people of New York the amounts that were due and owing to them based upon the misrepresentations, the lies, the accounting, not just errors, but manipulation done by the Trump Organization? What is the amount of money that will basically respond to that nature of the fraud? The judge yesterday delivering this sweeping array of punishments, and we're going to talk about all of those. And it does indeed threaten the former president's business empire in ways big and small. And we will see in the course of the next 3 months and years how significant that is. But of course, all of this happens in the midst of not only the presidential campaign, in which Donald Trump is presumably not only the leading candidate for the Republican nomination, but a viable candidate to return to the White House in November, among other things, in addition to this imposition of what is going to turn out to be about a $450 million judgment in this civil fraud case. The judge, Judge Engoron, said this. He said that because of the facts, because of the presentations made to him by the Attorney General, largely uncontested. Yes, there was testimony, not a lot of pushback, substantive pushback, upon which the judge could rely in understanding and incorporating the defense position into his order. The judge basically said that in addition to this whopping $450 million judgment, again predicated on a $355 million base, he also barred Donald Trump for 3 years. 3 years from serving in any top role at any New York company. That is significant. That is huge. He also imposed a two-year ban on the former president's sons and ordered them to pay, each one of them, to pay more than $400 million each. One of them, Eric Trump. You know Eric Trump. He's the company's, basically, he's the de facto chief executive. And that ruling just yesterday really does throw into doubt whether any member of the family can run the business in the near term. We're going to talk more about what's happening in the past and in the immediate future here. In addition to all of this, of course, the judge had things to say about the predicates, the bases, the factual bases for his findings. And he said this. He said their complete lack of contrition, by there he means the Trump players, the Trump family members, their complete lack of contrition, and remorse borders on the pathological. That's Judge Engoron releasing his opinion just yesterday about all of this. Now, undeniably, Donald Trump is going to appeal this. His lawyers have already indicated they will do just that. He's got the capacity to do it. That is a part of the due process, even in a civil case. He's got to do that and secure a bond within about 30 days or so. The ruling probably will not render him bankrupt, at least not immediately, but most of his wealth is in real estate, as we know, and for that reason, the issues about where all this money comes from loom large. The appeals court will probably also have before it a petition by Donald Trump to halt all these restrictions on him and his sons when it comes to running the company, as the appeals court reviews this in the future. In a news conference from his home in Mar-a-Lago just last night, Donald Trump attacked the Attorney General, Letitia James, attacked the judge, Judge Engoron, calling them both corrupt. More about all of this, the significance of this civil judgment, what it means, the practical implications of it, what happens next, and other aspects of this as we continue our all-important discussion here on our Saturday morning broadcast.
Eagle 1490 AM.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
Did you know there was a time when African Americans couldn't buy their own homes?
In 1948, the Supreme Court ruled the ban on selling property to black buyers was unconstitutional. Yet black people still couldn't purchase homes in white neighborhoods. The Fair Housing Act in 1968 ended this type of discrimination. But there's still work to do. Today, only 40% of black populations own their own homes. Listen for another Black History story here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Up North News Radio.
Continuing this morning, our exposition, our discussion, our review, our analysis of one of several breaking stories coming out of the courts of America just this past week. Initially on our Saturday morning broadcast, we're talking about this major million dollar judgment entered against Donald Trump by Judge Arthur Engoron in the Manhattan trial court just yesterday. We're going to chat about many other things related to courts in America. Delighted to have you once again with me this morning as we come to you live from the studios of WAUK here on the broadcast service network of Civic Media. Delighted to have you with me as we talk through this significant issue, why it's important, and what's going to happen next, and also take up many other issues this morning coming out of other courts in many ways related by virtue of timing and calendaring to what's happening in New York just this past week. Right before the break, we talked about the fundamental features of this, the headlines identifying once again what will probably end up being a $450 million judgment against Donald Trump once all of the arithmetic, all of the interest, and all of the related penalties are assessed here. Beyond just the monetary imposition, the significant portion of the judge's order also has to do with what's going to happen with the Trump Organization going forward. Talked already this morning about the imposition of restrictions on future supervision for a number of years by Donald Trump and his sons. But there is even a more significant portion of this that might do a lot to have an impact upon the future of the corporation. The lawyers for Donald Trump throughout this litigation have railed against the presence and the work of what's called a monitor, a person who was appointed many, many months ago, basically to monitor and to oversee and administer the operations of the Trump Organization while all this is pending. Her name is Barbara Jones. We've talked about her in the past. And the Trump lawyers have said that her work has cost the business about $2.5 million. And significantly, those Trump lawyers are upset, in addition to the amount of the monetary judgment, because Judge Engoron yesterday extended her oversight of this privately held company for a longer period of time. The judge basically said that she will continue to monitor all things related to the operations of the company, and that appointment that Barbara Jones has will continue. That also a significant portion of all of this monitoring piece, a significant consequential part of the judgment entered yesterday by Judge Engoron. The financial penalty itself reflects the lost profits, as the attorney general indicated during the course of the presentation in this case. And about half of the $355 million, about $168 million of that representing interest that Donald Trump saved. And the remaining sum out of that total representing his profit on the recent sale of two properties, money that the judge said the government, the state of New York, now can claw back, basically take back from Donald Trump and the corporate entities that he owns. I mentioned already that the judge had previously found that all of this comes in the wake of fraud, and that his annual financial statements, those of Donald Trump, had not only defrauded lenders, but also accomplished this violation of basic law in the state of New York. The judge's ruling, as you read through it, as you digest it, ratified almost all of the accusations that have been brought forth by the attorney general many, many months and even years ago. She filed this civil action claiming that Donald Trump had failed to properly evaluate and value various real estate ownings that he in fact has. And in the wake of all of this, Letitia James said this. She said this long-running fraud was intentional. She called it egregious. She called it illegal. And she said that there cannot be different rules for different people in this country. Former presidents are no exception. The reason why that is significant, of course, is because it echoes much of what we're hearing from other judges, including the judge who is right now presiding over the federal district case. Her name, obviously, Tanya Chutkan. We've talked a lot about her in the past, saying that presidents are not kings. Here we've got a prosecutor is saying presidents are no exception to the rule of law, also subject to all of the standards, the conditions, the terms of being incorporated and operating as a business person in the state of New York. As I indicated, the judge not only imposing the fine, imposing these restrictions on future behavior, but also granting Barbara Jones the continuing authority and even enhancing in some ways this monitorship that he has established previously, compliance, ensuring that the corporation is compliant with all of the touchstones, the rules, the regulations of the state of New York when it comes to financial reporting, but also other things down the road. Nothing could quite hurt as much, of course, as the financial penalty in the end. If it's upheld on appeal, it could require that the cushion of liquidity, as many people have identified, is some cash and some stocks and some bonds that Donald Trump has plainly built in his post-presidential life could be significantly compromised. We've got a significant hundreds of million dollars punishment here. You recall as well that the court, another court in New York, another civil court in New York in the defamation case brought by E. Jean Carroll also brought forth and has established a judgment in the amount of $83.3 million in favor of E. Jean Carroll. That follows an earlier $5 million judgment also based upon a defamation claim by that same plaintiff. The symbolism of all of these monetary judgments cannot be overlooked. It is undeniable that this is the latest in a series of civil cases in which the Trump organizations have been shown to be fraudulent. We know from the past that in addition to this particular finding about the core work of the Trump organization, we know as well that in mid-January, not too long ago, again, in a New York court, not identifying Donald Trump or his sons as defendants, but identifying the Trump organization as a criminal defendant in the wake of that criminal case, again, in New York, the corporation was, in fact, at that point, fined $1.6 million, basically in connection with about 17 different felonies, including some tax fraud matters, falsifying business records. All of this coming in the midst of an awful lot of focus on the Trump entities. That criminal case not too long ago now joins this civil case as yet another indication of the nature, the way in which the Trump organizations have been operating for years. Going back not too far, you recall well that the Attorney General, the Office of the Attorney General there in New York, was also responsible for shutting down the Trump Foundation. Again, finding that it really wasn't operating as a foundation under the rules and the regulations of the state of New York. That also a civil case stopping the fraudulent activity of the Trump Foundation. We know as well about other enterprises, for example, the Trump University, similarly, a fraudulent entity, supposedly academic and educational in nature, likewise shut down by the government in the wake of establishing factually that those organizations, the operations, are fraudulent in nature. We're going to talk more about this and talk again about the connection that this case has to the other cases that are also pending in other courts in America. When we come back, talking about those and the implications that this has, not only today, but down the road. Stay with us for that discussion.
Soaring from high above Riverside Park and Granddad's Bluff, this is the Talk of La Crosse. Eagle 1490.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Military aid for Ukraine remains held up in Congress. And at the Munich Security Conference, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said,
"And I thank to everybody who understands how much depends on this single voting procedure."
He was meeting with Vice President Kamala Harris. The conference has been dominated by the news of the death of Russian dissident Alexei Navalny. His allies say he was murdered, the Russian prison service, as he fell ill after a walk in his penal camp. A judge in New York ordered former President Donald Trump to pay more than $350 million in penalties after a civil suit found he misrepresented his wealth in order to secure more favorable loan terms. He is vowing to appeal, as he calls it a witch hunt. President Biden was in East Palestine, Ohio, Friday for the first time since last year's train derailment and chemical spill. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
How to get out of a slump. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Wisconsin Badgers men's basketball team trying to rebound after that four-game losing streak. In January, they won 7 out of 8 games and were ranked 6th in the nation. This week, they're 20th. After finally ending a four-game slump with that win over Ohio State, head coach Greg Gard has tried everything.
We'll get out of it. You know, we'll get back. We had a bad week. You know, I thought we played all right against good weeks. You know, like a few possessions back here or there. A bad half against Nebraska. But, you know, this last past week sucked. Yeah, and we got to play better. We didn't play well. So, get back to playing well. Playing how we know we can play, how we have played. You know? So that's the main thing. It's just continue to reinforce. Remember who we were and who we have been. And you've been that a lot more than what you've been the past week.
That's the Wisconsin Badgers head coach, Greg Gard. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Quite windy today. Winds will gust over 30 miles per hour, maybe 35 out of the west. Even though we'll have sunshine and air temps near 32, wind chills will be near zero or below most of the day. For tonight, mostly clear and breezy and a low around 25.
Right now, it's 15.
There's a small Wisconsin town where the population grows to 10 times its size every February.
Normally, we're about 2,600 people during Berkey Week. That gets up to 20, 30,000.
That's Blair Flickinger with the Foundation for the American Birkebeiner. The skiing marathon started with a couple of people carving a trail between Hayward and Cable 50 years ago. It's also a tribute to the ski culture of another country already hosting its own Birkebeiner. Is it Turkey, Norway, or Germany? The answer coming up.
There's a camaraderie that comes along with this event that is unparalleled.
A camaraderie between people who come to Hayward from around the world.
Make everyone feel like Hayward is their spot for the week.
So did you guess the Berkey was created as a tribute to Norway's 100-year-old race? And while our Berkey is a well-known winter event, it's still growing by adding other races all throughout the year. There's a slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
You cannot talk about Black history without including some of the early music and art which flourished in the 1920s and 30s. Time now called the Harlem Renaissance. But this new Black cultural identity was growing everywhere. Trumpet player Louis Armstrong moved to Chicago. Painter Henry Tanner was accepted into the Academy of Design. Musician Robert Johnson recorded the Delta Blues in Texas. Listen for another Black history story right here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
Soaring from high above on Alaska and French Island, this is the talk of La Crosse. Eagle 1490.
morning all about this major, major civil judgment entered against Donald Trump, his two sons, not only imposing a huge, huge monetary penalty upon him. We'll talk about how that gets paid, if at all, and also imposing upon the Trump players, the members of the Trump family, restrictions on the capacity to engage in supervision not only of their own corporation, but any other companies in New York for periods of years. Now, what is going to happen next? Well, we talked a little bit about this monetary penalty and this so-called bond. Donald Trump has 30 days to come up with the money. That is the amount of the judgment, or to secure a bond. And that is the case whether or not he appeals. He will certainly appeal. A company providing a bond will essentially assure the state of New York, Letitia James, the attorney general's office, that Trump has the money to pay the judgments. And that bond would, in effect, prevent the collection of this amount while the appeal is being heard. So either you pay or you post the bond. Now, the significant challenge here, of course, is that Donald Trump has to find a company that's willing to write the bond, as he faces not only this particular judgment, but also many other legal problems. Mentioned already again this morning, this $83.3 million judgment in that E. Jean Carroll case, that following the $5 million judgment and a much related proceeding there also in New York. A bonding company would probably also charge a premium and could also require that Donald Trump pledge cash and other liquid assets as collateral. So he's got some significant financial decisions and requests and petitions to make right now to financial organizations. It is being reported widely that this is something of a test of the extent to which Donald Trump is, in fact, the multimillionaire, maybe even billionaire, that he claims to be. There's no doubt that Donald Trump, in the course of his statements, certainly in the defamation case, other matters, has established he's got cash. But the judge's ruling, Judge Arthur Engoron yesterday, puts at all of that somewhat at risk. And between the defamation cases and this $450 million judgment that he will probably be required to pay now, it's entirely possible this could put some strains upon Donald Trump's financial civil status. Doesn't mean he will run out of money necessarily. He can sell one of his properties and those kinds of things. Unlikely to go bankrupt, something he has done before. But it is undeniably, at this level, $450 million. More than that, of course, when you add on the $83 million, the $5 million, the monetary amount is not an insignificant aspect of the impact on Donald Trump and his organization generally. And again, the continuing monitorship, the monitor work of the monitor, this is going to be a significant matter for Donald Trump as well. Now, how did the judge calculate this penalty? Well, again, we had a trial. We had experts coming in presented by Letitia James' office, people talking about the valuations of these properties, explaining why it is that there were certain monies not paid, undervalued properties, those kinds of things. And along the way, the evidence showed that Donald Trump and his company basically ignored appraisals, manipulated numbers to inflate the values of properties along the way. Those included things like golf clubs, office buildings, and some of those were to pretty absurd heights. And all of this is relevant because Judge Engoron reflects on this and confirms this during the course of his order of just yesterday. He describes one of the most blatant exaggerations was the listed size of Donald Trump's apartment in the Trump Tower there on Fifth Avenue. For years, apparently, the former president had valued it somewhere around 30,000 square feet value and was actually about 11,000 or so. In his ruling then, Judge Engoron blasts Mr. Trump and the other defendants. He says that misstating the apartment size was the only error to which they would admit. Goes on to say that he was not looking to judge morality, only to find facts and apply the law. And finally, he said the court intends to protect the integrity of the financial marketplace and thus the public as a whole. He added that Donald Trump's refusal to admit error left him with no choice but to conclude that Donald Trump would continue to commit fraud unless he was stopped. Again, shades, reflections of what we have seen in at least one other case That is the E. Jean Carroll defamation matter. When the question before the jury there, the huge amount of punitive damages inside that $83.3 million judgment, all of that based upon an assessment by that jury, not only of the present value, the present economic status of Donald Trump, but what would do enough to punish him? What is the amount of money that would stop him from doing this in the future? And that's why that judgment, the $83.3 million, is as high as it is. Compensatory damages for E. Jean Carroll also packaged into that. But all of this focused on how do you stop someone from doing the kinds of fraud in which he's engaging, the defamation being an aspect of his misconduct, his misbehavior out there. We know, again, that all of these are civil cases. There are civil cases with the exception, as I mentioned previously, of this criminal matter, also in New York criminal court, involving not an individual, but the corporation itself. It was in that case as well that the CFO, his name is Alan Weisselberg, he had also not only testified, but also found guilty, basically entered into a plea agreement and a finding of guilt imposed upon him. His exposure there, again, 5 months in prison, also now presumably cooperating somewhat with the government as all of these cases go forward. Now, what again is the immediate impact of all this? We talked already about the financial impact, the operational impact. It's plain that the impact of this will remain to be seen in the days and weeks just ahead. But it is significant, even in the civil arena, that something of this size happens. Along the way, Donald Trump's sons, Eric and Donald Jr., also brought into this. Interesting that during the course of the trial last month, again, on the damages amount, Judge Engoron had made a comment in connection with the presentation by the attorney general that suggested that he might spare the Trump sons from any exposure. He said, along with, what evidence do you have? I just haven't seen it that they, meaning Eric and Donald Jr., knew that there was fraud. That's the question posed by the trial judge presiding over the trial, Judge Engoron. Apparently, at some point in the last few weeks, Judge Engoron apparently saw that evidence because on Friday, he found that the sons, too, had violated the same laws that their father had engaged in and a conspiracy to overvalue their assets generally, wrote in his ruling that there was now sufficient evidence that the judge's words that Donald Trump Jr. and Eric Trump had intentionally falsified business records, noting that Eric Trump provided the company's former controller with knowingly false and inflated valuations for one property. Again, each of those sons now on the hook for about $4 million. As punishing as all of this is, it's plainly just the prelude to what is yet to come. And we're going to talk more about that now in connection not only with this particular case, but also other matters coming up. And so let's begin to move in that direction as well. All of that civil case, that civil judgment entered just yesterday in a New York trial courtroom in a civil proceeding. We know earlier in the week, one of the biggest stories breaking until just recent days was that in another courtroom, this one also in New York, but this a criminal courtroom, a court presided over by a judge named Juan Merchan, who has for many, many months again been entertaining, has been administering the criminal case brought by the district attorney in Manhattan. His name is Alvin Bragg. This is the hush money case. And just this past week, Judge Merchan said that the jury selection in that case is going to start on March 25th. Yes, that's right, later next month, and said that he's going to turn aside, he's going to rebuke any requests for a further delay by Donald Trump in that state criminal case, now apparently going ahead and rejecting, if you will, the requests, the petitions, the arguments by Donald Trump's lawyers that going ahead in March 25th for what will certainly be a weeks-long trial there would interfere with the White House campaign, the campaign by Donald Trump to resume his position as the President of the United States of America. The reason why this is so significant is, of course, not only the timing of this right in the middle of the coming campaign. March, again, is going to be a big month, as will all of the following months in this campaign. But it's also the first of the four criminal prosecutions to proceed to trial against Donald Trump and others as we've talked about them before. Significantly, in leaving this trial date intact, actually Judge Merchant had said it previously, but was waiting to see what's going to happen with other cases, most particularly this case involving the insurrection being brought by the grand jury and prosecuted by Jack Smith in Washington, D.C. That's the Tanya Chutkan case. That's the trial that she is presiding over. That case, as you know from our previous discussions, basically suspended. Judge Chutkan took her March 4th trial date off her own calendar. Why? Because an issue raised by Donald Trump having to do with the exposure that he has under a theory, a non-substantive theory called executive immunity, presidential immunity, is still being resolved by the courts. And right now, the courts have not yet decided what will happen with that. In that particular case, again, much related to the New York case, the reason why Judge Merchant put this case back on his trial calendar, kept it on his trial calendar, did not erase it, was, he said, in hindsight, frankly, I'm glad that I took that position, which is, again, keeping that March 25th date in place. He said, because here we are, and the D.C. case, that is the case involving insurrection, the four-count indictment against Donald Trump being prosecuted by Jack Smith in front of Tanya Chutkan. He said the D.C. case did not go forward. He said he decided to stick with the trial date, the March 25th date, the hush money case, after speaking last week with the judge in that Washington case. Again, her name is Tanya Chutkan. Tanya Chutkan herself, somewhat frustrated by the fact that she had to take her trial off her calendar, long scheduled for early March, while the appeals court and now the United States Supreme Court maybe going to review the appeals court decision. What is the status of that matter pending in Washington, D.C.? Well, just this past week, Jack Smith filed his memorandum discouraging the Supreme Court from taking that case, telling the court that they should permit the D.C. Circuit's opinion to remain in place, that D.C. Circuit opinion finding that there's no presidential immunity, that Tanya Chutkan was right, and permitting her to go ahead with all deliberate speed, I suspect, to try that case. That's a position taken by Jack Smith just this past week. Even so, it is still pending before the United States Supreme Court. We will see what the Supreme Court does on that case. But again, in the connection with the theme of 2024, timing and the interrelationship between all of these things, it was the pendency and the lack of a resolution, in the federal court of that immunity defense, the argument raised by Donald Trump and his lawyers, the failure of the courts to resolve that more promptly, that not only prompted Tanya Chutkan to take that trial off her trial calendar awaiting that decision, but also now, just early this past week, Tanya Chutkan and Juan Merchant talk, and Juan Merchant decides in the wake of that conversation that he is going to retain this March 25th deadline on his calendar, again, his trial in his courtroom, a state criminal prosecution involving hush money. Significant because it will be the first of the several criminal trials proceeding to trial, again, weeks and weeks, presumably including jury selection. In that case, as we know as well, Donald Trump charged with 34 different felonies, and they accuse him, again, of trying to cover up the sex scandal that involved at least a couple of women, Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal. According to all the allegations in those charges, those 34 felonies, related to the 2016 presidential election, right before that, the allegation is that a fellow named Michael Cohen, who interestingly also appeared in the fraud case involving Arthur Engoron, presiding over that case that we just now talked about, all these players, much related from one case to the next, Michael Cohen, a principal figure also now in this forthcoming trial in New York. How is that? Because he was one of the principal intermediaries at the time. He was the so-called lawyer and fixer for Donald Trump. The allegation is that through Michael Cohen, Donald Trump paid Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal $130,000, $150,000 in a so-called catch and kill scheme that we will talk about more right after this coming break.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for matinee on air.
There's a small Wisconsin town where the population grows to 10 times its size every February.
Normally, we're about 2,600 people during Berkey Week. That gets up to 20, 30,000.
That's Blair Flickinger with the Foundation for the American Birkebeiner. The skiing marathon started with a couple of people carving a trail between Hayward and Cable 50 years ago. It's also a tribute to the ski culture of another country already hosting its own Birkebeiner. Is it Turkey, Norway, or Germany? The answer coming up.
There's a camaraderie that comes along with this event that is unparalleled.
A camaraderie between people who come to Hayward from around the world.
Make everyone feel like Hayward is their spot for the week.
So did you guess the Berkey was created as a tribute to Norway's 100-year-old race? And while our Berkey is a well-known winter event, it's still growing by adding other races all throughout the year. There's a slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is the talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
And we are back talking this morning about all things court-related, including not only the significant judgment entered by a state court, a New York state judge named Arthur N. Goron, finding that Donald Trump, again, previously finding that he was responsible for a great deal of valuation fraud, and now imposing upon him this whopping $450 million judgment. That's what it's going to turn out to be in the end when all the interest is added up. And the impacts of that upon all of the other, not only the Trump entities, but all the other trials as well, chatting in our last moments of this, the first hour, about the interconnected relationship between that case and, yes, indeed, the hush money prosecution, now apparently going to trial, likely going to trial in front of Judge Juan Merchan, again, in another New York courtroom. This is a criminal case. It's a state case. Alvin Bragg, the DA there, having charged Donald Trump with 34 felony counts of falsifying business records in connection with this attempt to undermine information, to stop information going into the public domain, sometimes called a catch and kill process, paying off these two women to keep them quiet about affairs that they had with him, he had with them. And the allegation is that by virtue of what Michael Cohen did in paying monies to them, monies gotten from Donald Trump, Michael Cohen, he will testify, was the intermediary to make this happen. By virtue of all of that, Donald Trump paid about $420,000, represented that $420,000 amount was actually legal expenses that Michael Cohen had for legal work Michael Cohen had done, when in fact, they were reimbursements, and they were not legal expenses, and that's what Michael Cohen has testified to, not only in courts, but also before Congress, and certainly to investigators looking at all of this. That case going to trial now on March 25th, the first of the criminal cases. That's why that's so significant. The first of the criminal cases going ahead of all of these cases. It is not without some interest academically and in terms of law, because under New York law, the way that Alvin Bragg has charged this case is that, yes, the 34 felony counts alleging falsifying business documents premised upon New York law, but they're also premised upon violations of other laws. And he's got to identify what those specific underlying or predicate statutory violations are. And he can invoke tax law. He can invoke securities law. He can invoke other things. He can invoke federal elections laws as a predicate for his prosecution of these 34 felony counts. That, of course, is going to be a matter of argument before Judge Merchan. He has already entertained some of that, and certainly they're going to come back during the course of the trial. But it is not without its interesting academic piece, because it's not the straightforward prosecution some of these other cases are. On the other hand, many people have commented, and I will do the same, that the facts of this case are not nearly as elaborate as they are as alleged in, for example, the federal insurrection, the election interference case being prosecuted by Jack Smith, and certainly not as elaborate as the sweeping indictment brought by grand jury in Fulton County. We're going to talk about that in our second hour this morning at great length and pull apart the evidentiary hearing in that case. Nonetheless, this is the reason why this particular case is so significant. That is the hush money case. This is in many ways the origin story, right? This is how Donald Trump in many ways came to be, because it is the first one not only charged, but also this is the one right before the 2016 election. One has to wonder aloud, if indeed this information had come forth before the election, would it have had an impact? Hard to know. Reasonable people can differ on that and make different speculative judgments about whether the impact would have been significant. But in many ways, it is the one when we first identified these activities as going to the core of our electoral process, trying to deceive the American population, the people who vote or don't vote in our elections, about what he had done in the past. That's why this case goes beyond just the 34 felony counts, whether he is convicted of those or not. It identifies this activity at the start of Donald Trump's, certainly not the start of his campaign, but the start of his time happening shortly after that in elective office as the president of the United States of America. The other cases, plainly related, unrelated, they all partake of what fraud attempts to undermine the laws of America, attempts to deceive and to misrepresent, and that's what ties them all together. And so we've got, again, in the wake of all of this, the first time, a fairly certain trial date before Judge Juan Merchant coming up in about a month from now. All of that very significant in understanding all of the cases pending. We know as well, by virtue of taking some inventory here this morning, that the Mar-a-Lago case, as we talked last broadcast, continues to move apace even where there in Florida. Jack Smith very frustrated with the presiding judge, Eileen Cannon, for her decisions to permit the production, the release of the witness identification and other information. Jack Smith challenging that in the courtroom there and potentially seeking from the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals a ruling overturning Eileen Cannon's decision on that particular issue could also one day prompt him to say enough is enough, and could prompt him to seek her recusal, her removal from that case, if indeed the kinds of things that she has done in that case continue to move in the direction that they have. When we review all of this in our second hour, we're going to focus a lot upon the Fannie Willis case in particular, and that is the prosecution, of course, in Georgia. This multi-count indictment under RICO in the state of Georgia. As always, on our Saturday morning broadcast, we are delighted to have callers. We invite your calls in at 844-967-2789. That continues throughout our broadcast into the second hour. And we do have a caller online this morning, and we're going to take that call, and I suspect we're going to, Mark, I'm going to take your call and then perhaps even answer in the start of the second hour. But let's entertain Mark's comment or question right now. Mark, glad to have you with me.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for taking my call. I mean, this all kind of relates. I mean, that Donald Trump has committed fraud. I mean, he's been adjudicated to have committed fraud, to be actually lying. And the violence that is called upon because, you know, people, his supporters are out there, you know, saying they're picking on poor Donald Trump. And it's kind of interesting that we heard yesterday, it's kind of a preview, that Andrew Hitt says, well, the reason we did this is because we were afraid of Donald Trump, what Donald Trump might do if we thwart Donald Trump's wishes. And this all links together in this just, I see this spider web of interconnecting things, you know, his.
Soaring from high above Holman and UW La Crosse, this is the talk of La Crosse. Eagle 1490. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. Matt Nair on air.
Want to thank our previous guest, Bob Bonadour from the Milwaukee Planetarium. He's so knowledgeable and obviously loves what he does.
Yeah, because he gets to talk about space all the time. I'm not kidding you. I have watched videos about space and have started to cry. It's so flippin' beautiful to me.
Well, we found your birds.
Yes.
We have found your birds.
Space is my bird.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Soaring high above La Crosse, this is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.